Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzanetti, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good. You got your green shirt on today. I think you're serious. That green shirt denotes seriousness from you. How you doing, brother?
I think it works well with my complexion, you know, so it's one of the favorites. But hey, we have a very special guest today. Today's guest is a former FBI hostage negotiator and keynote speaker at Multifamily Mastery 6, otherwise known as the Financial Vacation for Smart People. You know, we'll see you guys out there. During his tenure with the Bureau, he acted as a lead crisis negotiator for the New York City Division and a member of the New York City Joint Terrorist Task Force. It's a hell of an alliteration there. So without further ado, Chris Voss, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Happy to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Gino, he's already coming out with the late night DJ voice, so we're in trouble here. So, hey, Chris, for those who have been living under a rock or maybe not flying Delta and seeing your master class out there for the past few years, please give the folks a brief overview of your time with the FBI and then your transition into the private sector.
Well, I was in New York City, was part of the Joint Terrorist Task Force and ran the hostage negotiation team for New York FBI. And then I got transferred, promoted to headquarters and went to the main unit, crisis negotiation unit, and ended up being in charge of all of our international kidnapping response, lead international kidnapping negotiator. An American got into trouble overseas, kidnapped. It was my job to come up with a strategy to get him out. So then I left the FBI, tried to find a real job, and started teaching negotiation at Georgetown and then at USC, a University of Southern California for those people on the other side of the United States, and wrote a book, Never Split the Difference, about applying the ideas from hostage negotiation to see if it worked out in regular life. Actually, I knew it did because I've been using it for a while. Book's done pretty well, and it's been number one in the business negotiation category for 5 years. And then, as you guys mentioned, did a master class, and that master class has done really well. And just recently wrote a book about applying the ideas of more directly into residential real estate sales for residential real estate
agents. Oh, I didn't
know
about that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The full fee agent. Wrote it with Steve Schultz. Steve, interesting cat. Really like Steve a lot.
Is out?
Yeah, yeah. It came out last November. Steve, interestingly enough, I knew he played in the NFL, but I knew Steve for well over a year before I found out he was a Super Bowl captain. And, you know, usually you find that out about people in the first 5 seconds. One of the Dolphins' losses, he played for Don Shula. I can't remember who they lost to, but unfortunately, you know, as a captain, he didn't get a ring. But he was a hell of a football player. He started
That's
coaching
awesome.
Residential real estate agents after that, and we wrote the book.
Very cool.
Chris, in the masterclass, you shared the story, which I thought was just, to me, touching and moving and motivating. Why did you want to teach negotiation? Why are you sharing all this knowledge? Because, I mean, honestly, if people read the book and just follow all the advice, they could, their negotiation skills can go up by 100%. Why did you start teaching negotiation?
Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff contributed to that. And there are several stories that you could be referring to. I mean, I left SWAT to get into negotiation because I tore my knee up. If you're talking about sort of the underlying motivation for most of my life,
yes.
I got cornered by a bully when I was a little kid, and it was the most scared I was ever in my entire life. And actually, the guy cornered me several times, but the one time in particular just horrified me. And so I've had an extreme distaste for bullies ever since.
I can see in your face right now, I'm getting a little intimidated.
Yeah, and I just felt, especially in kidnapping, I mean, somebody's in their darkest hour. Some really bad people have got them, and they need help. Their family needs help. And that's one of the reasons why I found that one of the most satisfying things I ever did.
And the reason why I wanted you to share the story is you've become massively successful because, to me, it sounds as if you found your purpose. You're not out there just trying to write books and trying to make millions of dollars. There's a purpose behind writing one of the best books that I've read in business in the last 10 years. One of the reasons why you're sharing your story, why the Black Swan Company is so amazing, why you've done the masterclass, why you've done thousands of podcasts, is because there's a purpose. And I think everyone needs to find that. And you've turned the trauma in your life into something really positive. So I want to give you kudos for that, because when I read that story, I'm like, man, I knew that's why I like the guy, because there's something behind it. He's not just trying to go out there and make money, which is, there's nothing wrong with it, but there's really a purpose and a desire and a willingness to share. Because we've had you on our calls with our coaches as well. You get on and you give of yourself, and it's like, you can't quantify how much value that it is in spending an hour with Chris Voss and him giving all that knowledge. It's just unquantifiable. Well, that's why I want people to come out to MM6.
It's consulting and coaching, and you get worried about this because there are some bad actors out there in the space where folks are out there simply trying to make a buck, you know, and they may not be fulfilling with their consulting or their coaching. And I think that's why we like you, Chris. You're the real deal. And we've benefited, you know, from your coaching and your teaching as well. I remember, you probably don't remember this, but it was, I think it was 2018. We had you on the podcast maybe a little after, you know, a couple years after the first book came out. And we were going through a deal. It was 240 some units. We were buying this apartment complex, and we were going through a negotiation on some of these breakers that had to be replaced because they were you know, life safety issues. They could burn the building down potentially. And, you know, we got on with you, and you probably don't know this, but it saved us literally a couple $100,000. I applied the techniques from the show. So, you know, it's real. And I guess that was a freebie, and thanks for coming on that one, but we'll take it, right? So we really
appreciate well done. That. Good for you. I'm happy to hear that. I'm really happy to hear that. And
this stuff's real, you know, is what I'm saying.
The thing I love about that story is typically with the stories that we hear, like, you're not telling me, you're not like saying like, I kicked their ass, you know, I had them over a barrel.
That was the right
classic
thing.
Negotiation stuff that is just really, it leads to people hating you in the long term. Like if you're bragging about a negotiation where I had them over a barrel, there's nothing they could do. You know, first of all, it doesn't come up that often. So the people that tell those kind of stories, you know, it's like once every 5 years. And then also, I mean, they're leaving enemies behind them. I mean, if you really take somebody to the cleaners, I mean, you've left enemies behind you. You know, you're bombing bridges, and it's not whether or not you're going to cross that bridge again. Those people are going to run out and burn bridges ahead of you. You know, your reputation precedes you in a way that shuts you down. So
I can speak to that. We just did a deal, and there were wholesalers involved. And for the folks on, they may know wholesalers, but there was a situation where one of the wholesalers got the other wholesaler, you know, like you said, bent over and kind of put this lawsuit on the property that was going to prevent the one guy from getting paid. And cost them about $500,000. And to your point, the other guy is now looking for the F back. If for those of you, I'm not going to say it, but there's some real hatred there, and some folks that, because they that gotcha moment. And I know the other guy's looking to get him. So it creates bad blood, and business is not done well that way over generations. So it's not how we like to do it, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Amen.
Let's take the opposite approach. You talk about tactile empathy. I think tactile empathy is the cornerstone of Chris Voss. Let's discuss that and describe that for the listeners, because this is where I think every negotiation should start with. It's just an amazing, amazing three strategy.
Yeah, you know, it's just the application. It's the active application of empathy, you know, in a very tactical way. And you know, what do we mean by tactical? Well, first of all is, I was just trying to get people who are scared of the word, you know, they think empathy is weakness, you know, it's, you know, want to hug, want to, you know, fall.
The women coaches talk about it, like
sob.
Brené Brown, right? It's for the ladies.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to tell you something. And by the way, Brené Brown, I was lucky enough to find myself in the crisis negotiation unit, got her to come in and talk to him. And I'm sitting in a room with them, the top hostage negotiators, the FBI. She's there voluntarily. I don't even know she's in a room. And she kind of blew me away. Brené Brown is a bit of a badass. I mean, she takes an approach that's really designed principally to help women improve their lives. But I'm sitting there furiously writing notes, and she's there voluntarily, just same as me. I mean, this was not a paid gig. We kind of joked around about it because she talked about being late to the airport. You know, I got to get up and go. I'm enjoying the conversation. You know, I looked at the SWAT commander. I said, look, dude, you got a helicopter. You can give her a ride to the airport.
I love that.
The folks on our team love her. They you know, they're all consuming her content. So she's super popular amongst our teams, for sure.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I got a kick out of her. But, you know, the idea, first of all, is, you know, somebody said, you're just trying to get SWAT guys to use the term empathy, you know, like SEAL Team 6, you know, you tell SEAL Team 6, let's do some yoga breathing. And they'd be like, F you. And then you say, okay, let's do tactical breathing. Go, okay, we'll do that. You know, you gotta use some terminology to get some people to accept it. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, I found out what we learned in hostage negotiation, we didn't know it was just neuroscience. You know, what are the words that clear up the negative activity in a person's brain so they can think clearly and make good decisions and bond with you simultaneously. And I learned all this stuff in hostage negotiation. And then I started, Tal Ross once said something to me. He said, you know, you tell people to drive for the that's right moment. Can somebody say that's right? Not you're right, just that's right. And he said, I think what it is it triggers a subtle epiphany in somebody. You know, you give them an insight. They go, yeah, you know, that's right. And so I'm like, all right, let me look up epiphany. And the neurochemicals of epiphany are oxytocin and serotonin. And oxytocin, everybody knows, is the bonding drug. You know, people think it's a two-way bond. It's a one-way bond. They bond with you. But then I'm listening to Huberman probably about a year ago, and he's on a relationship podcast. He says, yeah, when people get a hit of oxytocin, they're also more honest and more likely to tell the truth. So it's a truth drug. And then serotonin, the drug of satisfaction, you know, what does that mean? Well, what that means is people want less. They're more agreeable in the negotiation. So it is tactical application in neuroscience is what it boils down to. And it's a very indirect route to accelerate any deal and also not leave an enemy. And that's really what it, you know, what it's about. People love to feel understood. And what happens when they feel understood? They tend to agree with you.
More business will get done in the future too, because to your point, when you quote unquote bend someone over or whatever, they're not going to want to do business with you again. And especially in our space where we're dealing with multifamily property owners, it's sort of a small circle, especially for the folks that own a bunch and they're going to do deals together over time. You want repeat business. So it's not worth it.
Yeah. They're going to drag their feet in the deal. Mm-hmm. They'll go side. Otherwise, you know, if you bend them over, they'll go sideways every time they get the chance. And one of the conversations, we got this other thing going on Fireside, which is pretty cool, which I can tell you guys about later. But I get to talk to Mark Cuban on it because he's a co-founder of Fireside. And he says, you know, then the velocity of deals with those people increase. Mm-hmm. Like if next time they felt respected, at least, let's say they didn't even do that well, they just felt tremendously respected. Next time around, the deal accelerates. They'll do more deals. They'll do them faster. You start saving a massive amount of time.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, to that point, 2 years ago, we did a deal with a mom and pop. He actually referred his friend's seller properties to us, which is amazing. Wow. We got like three deals back to back to back from his friends. I was like, this is great. And all we did is we did what we said and we said what we did. But what you said in the book also, questions force empathy. So let's talk about that real quick. Give the other side the illusion of control by asking how and what questions. Let's touch on that real brief because that's so important because we're talking about empathy. How do we get that empathy?
Yeah, well, this is an observation my son Brandon made in the early days. You know, our first way of saying no, like when you're presented with something that is just not going to work, or, you know, that people are asking for too much, which if they don't know any better, they will. And you say, look, how am I supposed to do that? And what it does is it makes them look at you. It makes them, you know, empathy, you want it to be a two-way street. You want the other side to take a hard look at your position. Mm-hmm. And become aware of it, at least, if not respond to it. Mm-hmm. And I always thought of how am I supposed to do that as a way to say no, and it is. And then Brandon said, no, man, you're forcing them to see you by asking that question. It's a stop and think question, stop you in your tracks. It doesn't even matter what the answer is. What matters is the thoughts that go through their head when you ask. So you're forcing them to see you, take a look at your situation, take into account the difficulties that you have to deal with. And you're asking for help. Like, look, dude, you know, you show me a good way to do this, a way that works for me. We got a deal. But the way it stands now, like, how am I, take a look at my surroundings. How am I supposed to do that? And that's really about making the other side see, have empathy for you.
I really hope, Jake, all of the real estate investors just heard that because over the last year and a half, it may not have worked. But now with debt where it is, where interest rates where they are, and if a seller has to sell, you know, dude, how am I supposed to buy it at this price? That was the price last year. Rates and cost of capital have doubled. There's just no way. How? And then they can look at it and go, well, I still don't like your price. I still don't like you, but you've got a point there. I mean, that is phenomenal. Seriously, that's such a great way to put it back in the other person. So
I got to tell you my favorite, how am I supposed to do that story, which I just remembered when we were talking about it. And it has to do with Cuban again, maybe because I mentioned him. It's a Shark Tank. Somebody sent me the video of it. It was great because, you know, he has a bad unfair reputation as a bully. He is not. What he does is he tests people a lot. You know, he wants to see if you got any game.
He's direct
because if you do a deal with him, you're going to be his ambassador. If you're a business partner of his, if he can push you around, what does he need you for? Other people are going to push you around too. Interestingly enough, Andre Norman said the same thing to me about recruiting people in a prison. Anyway, so Cuban throws this line out in the Shark Tank episode. He says, look, I'm going to make you an offer and you got to say yes or no. You cannot listen to any of the other offers from any of the other sharks. You answer me first or the offer is withdrawn. And these guys go, how are we supposed to do that? And he just kind of stops and looks and he go, yeah, how are we supposed to do that? And they start reeling off the reasons why it's difficult and how are we supposed to do that. And by then, like, all right, so now he's listening and the other sharks start chiming in and he doesn't object. Like 2 seconds ago, he said, you can't talk to anybody else. And they hit him with a, how am I supposed to do that? Now the conversation's opened up and he's not angry. He's not pushing back. He's listening. You know, he likes keeping his mouth shut so he can listen and he can't gather information when he's talking. And somebody sent me that video and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, somebody black swan Mark Cuban.
Bam, right there, man. Let's talk about mirroring, because I think mirroring is such a powerful and simple technique. And I think the only thing is you just got to get it into your repertoire. But once you start doing it, people keep talking. They don't shut up. And all you're doing is repeating a couple of words and they keep talking and they keep talking. And it's just amazing. Can you go over that? Maybe give a little story about mirroring.
You had some very interesting experience with this exact same thing that you were relating a little bit ago, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, mirroring is the simplest and one of the most effective. It's just repeating, first of all, the last three words of what somebody's just said. And it connects their thoughts and it keeps them going. And, you know, you can guide them and you can direct them. And it's insanely simple. And when you first do it the first few times, just repeat what somebody said. You think you're going to get called out over it or you're going to think they're going to yell at you. And it works. And instead of getting called out, getting yelled at, you know, they talk some more. They expand. They go on. I mean, It's better than when you want to say to somebody, what do you mean by that? Because when you say, you know, what do you mean by that? They say it exactly the same way, only louder. They like shout it at you, like an American overseas trying pissed to get directions to the Eiffel Tower.
I told you, idiot.
Yeah. And but then nobody gets angry. They just go on. And most of the time when you don't know what somebody meant, you need them to re-explain in different words. You need them to add to those words. You need them to change it up. And for whatever reason, when you give somebody a mirror, just a repetition of 1 to 3-ish words, no more than 5. And it doesn't have to be the last. It could be any portion. But you just gave the words back to them, which means, look, I got the words. And it wasn't enough. And I need some help here. And it triggers people's thoughts. And I know some people, that's the only thing they do.
Nice, yeah.
Because the other person will talk long enough in between that they won't notice that's what you're doing. You know, they feel listened to. You potentially become one of the most interesting people in the entire room. Because instead of jumping in with your story, yeah, that happened to me once. Yeah, I was playing golf once and a wild pig walked across a green and we all ran off. You know, if somebody tells a story about farm animals, and suddenly it's no longer about you. But it's a great way to make it about them and make them feel dialed into and listened to. And you'll find yourself in a 45-minute conversation with somebody. You said maybe five things, and they talked the whole time. They didn't even notice it.
To be interesting, you need to be interested. I don't know who said that. I've heard that many times. And I think people think that they need to be to speak and to talk and to interject. I think if you let a person be heard, because how often does someone actually be heard? And that's such a powerful technique and tool. And it's a great way to create that rapport with the person you're speaking to. So I'm telling you, Jake, just try it. Try it with your wife. When you leave, just tell her, you know, she's going to make you that shake when you leave. I know you haven't had your shake yet. You had it. Okay. So when you go out and get a little snacky
pool over there. Now. It's like 9:30 or, you know, we're on it. Okay. We got a system over here.
Okay. Labels. Chris, let's talk about labels real quick, because I think this is another really powerful technique that you talk about in the book and even in the masterclass, because it's just so important to use labels.
Yeah. Labels is just a verbal observation. It starts out real simple. You sound... You seem, you look, you're in the middle of a negotiation, you throw a proposal out, and you see the other person look off to the side and go like, okay. So the label would be, looks like something just crossed your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, labels are usually based mostly on tone of voice or body language. And one of the safest labels of all is, looks like something just crossed your mind. Because what you'll do is, it's like reading body language. Here's the problem with reading body language. You don't know for sure what crossed their mind. You know, as Joan of Arc wrote a book called What Every Body is Telling You. A good book on body language. Former FBI agent, was a profiler. And we don't teach body language at all because, like, you don't know what crossed their mind. Like, somebody looks off to the side and looks back. They could have envisioned success. Somebody looks off to the side and looks back. They could have envisioned failure. They could have thought about what they had for breakfast. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the same body language every time. You got anywhere from 3 to 5 different possibilities of what went through their head. And looks like something just crossed your mind. Then they'll tell you. You know, you don't got to guess. I'm in a negotiation probably about 6-7 years ago, and I threw out a number, and the guy looks off to the side and back. And I think at the time it means he's holding money back. In point of fact, I have pushed him to his limit. And that ends up, and I don't check. I don't find out. I find out after the fact, after everything goes bad. Mm. And I'm thinking like, oh, man. I remember that physical tell. I completely read it wrong, and I didn't check. And the way you check with a label, if somebody gives you some body language, you know, you throw your best guess, and it doesn't even have to be right, because, you know, then they're going to give you some follow-on information. I practice labels all the time on TSA guys at an airport. I mean, these are, you know, it's fair. It's like a video game. They're always going to be there, and you get a run through, and you get practice, and there's no penalty, right or wrong. And so, you know, I roll through, and I kind of forget.
You don't have like an automatic swipe through, like, hey guys, see, it's me, former FBI dude. There's
no, man, I should. Exist. You should. I should. It's called clear, right? But I throw a label on this dude, and I go, it looks like it's been a tough day. And it hasn't. He just had an indifferent look on his face. He's like, no. And I go, ah, just another day, huh? And he goes, yeah, just another day. It gives me a smile. But what does that do for me? It's like doing a little bit of a stretching before you get in a game. Not 10 minutes later, I'm in the middle of a conversation I did not expect. It was a business conversation. But I've kind of limbered myself, my negotiation, my perception muscles up a little bit by just throwing a practice label on this guy at TSA. I was ready when a phone call came in 10 minutes later. It was somebody I've been trying to get a hold of. Normally, I don't talk to people unless I can sit down and focus. And I'm rolling through the airport, and this is a very good friend who's very hard to get on the phone. And I got to talk to him when he calls. So the label is just, you know, it's like being aware of people's state, mm-hmm. and then throwing a verbal observation on it. You sound, you seem to look. Sometimes it's a feel. I had one of our guys who's a superstar negotiates huge deals, $100 million deals. He's talking to his CEO's secretary, and she's blowing him off. And he just says, you know, it feels like I'm getting blown off here. And she had actually lapsed into auto mode and didn't realize that that was what she was doing. Because, mm-hmm. you know, most assistants, executive assistants, their job is to be the blocker, you know, to be the filter. And sometimes they can get on autopilot and not sort it out themselves. And you got to help them be aware. You know, he wants to say, look, this is important. I need to talk to your boss. She's on auto mode. She's tired. You know, maybe somebody just annoyed her. Nothing to do with him. And he goes like, yeah, it feels like I'm getting blown off here. And she's like, oh. And he gets the appointment. So a label is just an observation of a dynamic emotion, an action, and slapping, it seems like, sounds like, looks like. And it's kind of amazing how it breaks down barriers and it brings people into the moment. Again, the thing you talked about before about making people feel you're interested in them, and they open up. They really open up.
It forces open-ended thought on the other side, though, too, and it allows you to sit back and observe the other side. If you say something like that, they're going to stop in their tracks and be forced to think, and it's going to take that autoresponder off. It's pretty amazing and simple at the same time.
Yeah, and you make a very good point. Sometimes, even on my team, I'll label in a meeting to get them to think.
Yeah.
And it really does. Everybody involved, I heard a guy in another interview on another podcast describe empathy as a species of reason. And I went, oh, wow, interesting. And then I started noticing that if I need one of my logistics people to think something through more, I'll go, it seems like there's a lot going on here. And I can watch them think. And I can actually watch other members of the team hearing a label, even if it's not on you. Mm-hmm. It kicks everybody's thinking into gear.
Mm-hmm. Do people like working for you, Chris, or do they always think you have an agenda?
We got people whose values line up, so they know my agenda is that we all prosper, and they're sure. good with that.
Yeah, I'm just being a smartass, by the way. I think it's funny. If I was on your team, I'd be like, "Is he trying to pull some of that voodoo shit on me right now, or what?" I'd be questioning all the time in the back of my head.
That voodoo shit.
Yeah.
Nice. Stenziano, before we go to the short answers, this is really important. You have the 7-38-55. And for everybody who doesn't know what that is, it's talking about the 7% is the content of your, you know, what you're saying. The 38% is the tonality. And the 55% is the body language. When we're trying to persuade somebody, it's broken down into those three categories. Can you talk about your voice and the tonality of the voice? Jake joked around early on about the DJ voice. And I think the voice is so powerful. If we can train our voice to be powerful and to be persuasive, and you have different tonalities that you use, can you go over that real quick? Because I think that's truly important. I mean, once people become cognizant and they can use it as a tool, especially salespeople. I mean, salespeople have a strong voice. For instance, before I let you answer, Margaret Thatcher, she had that whiny voice early on. Then later on, she's just started toning up and her voice became more diplomatic and more, I would say, powerful, more commanding, completely changed the game for her.
Wow, yeah. It's tone makes your words land, period. Mm-hmm. Like my academic brothers and sisters, you know, they always get wrapped around the axle over the 7-38-55 rule. And I can remember one time when I'm with the crew at Harvard, this female's going like, I don't think tone of voice is that important at all. You know, I think it's far more important what you say. You know, and her tone of voice was horrible and nobody's listening to it. Like she's making the point for us. And it's huge. I mean, whatever analogy you got to have, I mean, with law enforcement people used to say, you know, think about it as the spin you put on a bullet is the tone. Like, and I know of real stories in the Philippines, their army, their rifles were so old, they'd shot so many bullets through the rifles that they'd lost the rifling inside the gun, you know, the lanes and the grooves that make the bullet spin. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is a bullet comes out of a barrel and it starts to tumble right away instead of spinning like a football or any other ball that goes through the air. And because the bullets are tumbling, they'd actually watch the bullets bounce off of some of the terrorists. And then they got this legend that these guys, you know, they got these mystical powers that make them invulnerable to bullets. I've seen bullets bounce off of them. And you're like, dude, they're not bouncing off because these guys got magic. Your bullets aren't spinning. They're not hitting the target. And that's exactly what happens with your words, which is why you can get away with saying horrible things to people. Like you can say to somebody, I think that was kind of a thoughtless thing to say. And that sentence would land. And if you go like, I think that was thoughtless, you'd be F you. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, mm-hmm. Completely changed by the tone of voice. And if you can master tone, like you don't even have to be that good at words. If you can master tone, your ability to get along with people and inflection, you know, first I learned tone, which was, you know, the late night FM DJ voice, you know, the downward inflecting tone of the natural tone of the analyst, you know, and then there's the smiling tone of the accommodator, you know, hey, I'm happy to see you. How's it going? You know, they're constantly smiling. They don't want to be sunshine and roses all the time, which has its place. Mm-hmm. And then the assertive, you know, for lack of a better term, the Donald Trump tone of voice, which is what most people think negotiations should be. And I'm a natural born assertive. So, you know, that's a thing I had to get out of. Yeah. And assertive, assertives always make you feel like they think you're stupid. You know,
witty, right?
Yeah. Yeah. My son once did an impression of me. He says, this is Chris Voss. I'm not that smart, but I'm smarter than you, and that makes you an idiot. Like, all right. Yeah, it's my tone of voice. Uh-huh. And so then you learn the basic tones, and basically the only voice that's bad all the time is the assertive voice. The assertive always makes people feel like they're getting punched in the nose. And even if somebody deserves a punch in the nose, or is asked for it, that doesn't mean long-term it's a good idea, because that their nose is going to hurt for a while and it's going to interfere in everything else that they do. Mm-hmm. And then I'll give props where they belong. Oh, Jordan Belfort's book, The Way of the Wolf. I'm like, this book is selling like crazy. And what did he do? Because whatever you think of Belfort, he did it well. Otherwise, he wouldn't owe $150 million in restitution. You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm looking through it, and I thought, he's a master of inflection. And in chapter 7 of his book, he talked about the inquisitive inflection. And I thought, did you really mean that? Versus, did you really mean that? And we started taking a hard look at inflection and really added that to our tonality set. And if you can time it. And Gino, you were talking earlier, you know, that you taught yourself a lot of these things. You can teach yourself this. None of this is natural. This is all learned. Mm-hmm. And you teach yourself tone and inflection. And boy, you can get some words to land. You know, I can, in my training, I'll do it specifically because I'll say something to people in the morning that I know they're going to push back on in the afternoon. And because I'm waiting for that moment when I can say, when I told you this in the morning, you thought I was a liar? And that's all about inflection. And I could say, when I told you that in the morning, you thought I was a liar. And that's an accusation. It's insulting. It's mm-hmm. The first one lands. Mm-hmm. And it's all about inflection.
Gino, real quick, I got to dig a little deeper here. Chris, did you go from an assertive to a full-time late-night DJ? Is that what I'm hearing right now? Because it sounds
pretty close, yeah.
Okay, so follow-up question to that, and this is for the guys out there. Got to help the dudes out. How's it play with the ladies? Come on, honestly. Is the assertive or a late-night DJ? What really gets the deal closed here?
It's definitely an advantage.
Oh! Podcast just paid for itself. There we go. Take that home, fellas.
There aren't that many stories that are out there, but I, you know, there was, especially at Georgetown, you know, there's some of my students at Georgetown, and, you know, the young single guys are running around the bars and they're coming into class the next week. Like, I got this chick's number, man. I want to tell you something. She wouldn't give her number out to anybody. I mirrored her. I labeled her and I use a late night voice and we're going out.
The trifecta. It's got to be the next book. I mean, you really want to, you want to hit mass appeal and mass audiences, write something on that and through the
roof. It's the triangle. You just gave his next infographic. That's, you got it. The triangle. That's the triad right there.
Done.
I love that, dude.
Done.
Excellent.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
All right. So, Chris, coming from the FBI and then and jumping into the private sector, don't think you had an extensive business background or anything like that. How were you able to scale your business? Was it just the quality of the content, or do you have some best practices that allowed your organization to scale?
Yeah, well, the first thing was a little bit of a cliche. You want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go as a team. You know, fortunately, in the early days, my son Brandon was always there. And so I had a teammate that I could trust. And we started to build it out from there. And then for a short period of time, then his wife came on board and she had complementary skills. I mean, she's very organized, very analytical. We were not organized. But we needed to build out the team. And we kind of survived in the initial days based on team. And point of fact, the reason the book went so well and has continued to do well is the team aspect. And Tal Roz was a writer. I would flatter myself as saying I'm the thinker. It was my idea. It was my creation. But I wasn't a writer.
This was the person you did the book with, right?
Yeah. Tal Roz. Phenomenal business book writer. I mean, he put Keith Ferrazzi on the map with Never Eat Alone. And so it was complementary skills. You're never going to make it by yourself. You got to have a team. And then the real big stepping point, stone, turning point, to confuse all those terms, we started running EOS in the business, which was just a systematic approach to business focused on two things, really using a calendar and next steps. And EOS was originally designed by Gina Wickman. It sprung out of real estate brokerages, how to organize them, how to get people moving together. But I went from wanting nothing on my calendar, because I'm a spontaneous dude. Like, what I loved about working in international kidnappings is, like, drop me in the middle of this craziness and let's navigate it. And every day, every hour is going to be different. Like, the game is going to change from sunrise to sunset. And we got to be ready. And I love the ad lib. And I love the spontaneity of it. And without realizing that it ended up being very predictable along around probably about four or five avenues. And I just gained a great feel for just be ready for any one of five possibilities. But I hated calendars. And now if it ain't on my calendar, it doesn't get done. You know, instead of the calendar being the system that constrained me, the calendar is a system that enables us to get stuff done. So principally EOS and calendars and next steps. Like if we talk to somebody, if we haven't got a next step, and if we aren't engaging in steps in the meeting, then it's a horrible meeting. Something comes up, somebody should. There ain't no somebody should. Somebody's going to, and this is when they're going to do it. And so that made all our meetings effective. And then once you start having systems, then you can scale. I'm convinced now that systems should run 85% of what you do, which leaves your brain power for the 15% that needs you, whatever it is that you do. And then come up with systems, and the first system's a clock, the second system's a calendar. And then you start building stuff around it. And so it was really taking our team and making it systematic, and the system that we adopted was EOS.
I really appreciate you saying that, because we had a very similar journey where we got so hooked, you know, doing EOS, we actually did scaling up as well, just because we wanted to see everything that was out there. And I think you see these stats of so many businesses that fail when starting out. It's because you take these people that have this, I'm a mentality, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do everything. They come and insert themselves into this solopreneur world, and then they're never able to scale, and ultimately the business crashes. And they don't have these trainings and these systems trainings that you're talking about. It's not really taught in school, so it's such a good resource. The work that, you know, like you said, that EOS and Scaling Up have done, it propelled our business, and it sounds like it's done the same for yours. So appreciate that.
Yeah.
The books you recommended a few books, so I'm guessing you're an avid learner here. Anything else you've read in the last year or two that you want to recommend to the folks that has added value to your life?
Wow, what I'm looking forward to reading that I've gotten some good hints into. There's a book called Neuroselling, and some of the people on our team are looking at it. And some of our clients have brought it up, and I thought, okay, well, this is cool, because one way or another, we're circling back on almost every sales book that somebody brings up that they're using. Mm. So I'm looking forward to reading Neuroselling, and I just picked up, there's some cliche stuff that I'm looking forward to reading that keeps coming up. Like, how do you not read it? Like, so I just picked up Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. I'll tell you one that I picked up that I found fascinating, and I'm still in, Man's Search for Meaning. And one of the things that jumped out at me about that was what keeps coming up in different places is the term curiosity. I heard several years ago that Elon Musk, in his early days, his brother said that he wrote completely different books simultaneously, looking for universal principles that would show up in both places. And so curiosity keeps showing up in as a superpower. Nassim Nicholas Taleb's book, Anti-Fragile, you know, post-traumatic stress growth. Like, how does getting crushed make you better? Instead of just surviving, you know, resilience is just surviving. But how do you get better and stronger? And he calls out curiosity as a superpower. Derek Gaughan on my team is constantly telling people to be curious about what the other side's really thinking. And then a Man's Search for Meaning, I mean, Jewish people in German concentration camps, how do you survive? And this guy says, the moment I got curious about what the day would bring, which would be potentially my death, but as soon as I got curious about the horrors, then psychologically I found I could survive them. And so Man's Search for Meaning, surviving a Nazi prison camp, curiosity. Nassim Nicholas Taleb, Anti-Fragile, curiosity is a superpower. You start picking this stuff up, and you know that's why my reading is all over the place, and I'm trying to pick up as much as I can. Yeah, I'm an avid reader.
Is it all over the place, or are you searching, you know, for ways to improve? And there seems to be a general curiosity there, to your point, where, look, a lot of the stuff that we're experiencing in our life has been done or experienced by others, and we can glean from the past and go back and see other folks' experiences and make ourselves smarter and evolve as humans. So I think it's very direct, actually. I don't think it's all over the place, and I share that same passion. So I think it's awesome.
What are you reading? I want to hear what you're reading. What are you reading?
So Gino got me this one right now, and so
what did, you know, Gino get you? Gino got you, right? Well, I want to hear what Gino got you.
First of all, Chris, I can't read. You know, I literally have never been able to read in my entire life and sit down and focus. I'm a big Audible guy, so unfortunately, if it doesn't get on the Audible, it doesn't get on my list. But I got Wild at Heart right now. So the G-Dad got me on Wild at Heart, and it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm enjoying that one quite a bit. I'm actually going back, and there's a few books that I've hit a couple times. I'm on my third reading of Principles by Dalio, and that one has made a huge impact on my life. So there's a component of growth for me when I'm out there reading books, and then there's this shit was so good. I got to go back because I'm going to have more growth diving deep into this and picking out the nuggets that I missed the first time than going to read something that's potentially bullshit or garbage. Because we'll do, you know, the problem with me is I'll pick something up and I'll force myself to finish it. And I'd be like, this 8-hour book could have been 30 seconds. You wasted a lot of my life. I'm pissed at you now. But hey, that's
yeah, the guy's message at the end of the book was think outside the box, right?
No shit. I'm like, you really, you know, so I'm like 12x speed. Got to get through this. But yeah, that's it. So tell us again about the book that just came out last year. Want to hear more about that. Anything else you have on the horizon and then where folks can, the hub for all things Chris Voss.
Yeah, The Full Fee Agent. Wrote it with Steve Schull, former NFL football player, Super Bowl captain with the Miami Dolphins, coaching real estate agents. Steve comes across my book and throws out everything he'd been doing in coaching agents and was a very successful agent. After the NFL, he was on Wall Street, then became a real estate agent. I think he said his first year he closed 50 contracts, first year. And, you know, he just took, you know, the find and grind, you know, get at it, and what he'd been taught in the NFL. And then he comes across Never Split the Difference, and he's like, wow, and throws everything out, reaches out for us, and redesigns the entire approach. And so Steve and I have been coaching agents together in his coaching practice for several years, and we got to put a book together because residential real estate agents that we coach now are not working 24/7. They're working normal business hours, 5 days a week. They're off on weekends. They're not taking calls at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, at 10 o'clock on any night, and they're making more money. And how do we do it? Really hammered hard on this concept called proof of life, really made it a center point of the full fee agent. It's in Never Split the Difference. When we wrote Never Split the Difference, we didn't realize proof of life, also known as a favorite of the fool. If you don't know who the fool in the game is, it's you. And the other thing is there's always a fool in the game. There's never not a fool in the game. In any business conversation, there are people there that are there to drive the price down, to be competing bids, to provide free consulting, to convince people to stick to the status quo. They're just checking with you because they're scared to make a decision and they want to stay where they are. Those are all versions of being the fool in the game. And so just really emphasize that in The Full Fee Agent, and just let people know outside, show people outside of the direct coaching practice how to work 20% as much and make the same amount of money, how not to take calls on evenings and weekends, how not to go out on a sales presentation when the seller has already made up their mind who they're going to go with. So people that are following the advice in that book are going from living in a world of anxiety as a real estate agent to actually enjoying our lives.
It's an interesting group of folks for sure, right? The real estate agents out there, they have a wild ride.
There's so many of them. I just went through a failed transaction myself.
No shit.
Because the seller's agent was afraid to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest fears. I mean, afraid to give bad news, you know, wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. And the transaction that I didn't get because the price wasn't there, the guy's taking it off the market. What does that mean? That agent's getting fired. He's nothing. So fed up with being pushed that he's going to take it off the market. The last mentions I got, he's taking it off the market and he's going to rent it out for a year.
That's bullshit.
Like, that ain't in his interest.
That ain't happening. Okay, buddy, you got me.
he's firing the agent. That's what's happening. She's getting fired.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
So, Chris, just to close that one out. So anything else on the horizon, books, courses, anything else coming up?
The other thing we're doing right now that's really cool, because I mentioned Cuban a couple of times in the Fireside thing. Fireside is a subscription. It was brought to us as an interactive podcast, similar to what Clubhouse is/was, but much more interactive. And what it's turned out to be is group coaching. We do an hour a week, And we get people on literally from all over the world. Fireside is an app that's on your iPhone or on your Android. It's in the App Store. It's a subscription service. We will charge you for it. And when I realized we were doing group coaching, I went back to my team and I said, what would we charge for this? You know, when we charge a company for this coaching, an hour a week, 4 hours, you know, every week. So it's 4 or 5 hours a month. Like, what do we charge for this? And our fee for group coaching is $25,000 a month. And Fireside is $1,000 a year. And I went, oh, man, if I hadn't known we were giving it away for this, I don't know that I'd have done this. But we got people signing in from all over the world. The hour coaching is, you know, we do 15 to 20 minutes on a topic. Then we take questions, and you get to either ask about the topic at hand or you ask about the negotiation you're in at that moment. And chances are the person that's asking about questions is probably, if you don't get a chance to ask the question yourself, they're going to ask something that's on your mind anyway. So it's pretty cool. The other day, the guy signs in, he comes up on video, and it's dark around him, completely dark. And I'm like, dude, what are you in, hide in somebody's basement? I mean, you know, you're on the run from the police. And he says, no, as a matter of fact, I'm in a cave on a mountaintop in Tibet. And I'm like, what? Where are you? They got internet there? He goes like, yeah, I got to negotiate with my boss and I need some hints. So it's a pretty cool thing. I get a kick out of it.
That's a first. And the hub, is it, what's the website for all things your companies, Black Swan, et cetera?
Black Swan, LTD.com, BlackSwanLTD.com. There are no crazy silent consonants, you know, like we ain't spelling faux with a PH or anything crazy like that.
Keeping it simple.
Fair, so it's just straight BlackSwanLTD.com.
Yeah, we've done a little bit on that Fireside, man. That thing is wild. It was a trip for sure. So, Gino, you ready to take us home here?
Jake, I'm going to try to do my DJ voice, and I'm going to try to recap Chris
Drop
Voss's
it down, dude.
Story.
You're too high right now.
Okay. Well,
dude, I want to hear it. I want to hear.
Too high? Okay. You have a young Chris Voss in the playground being bullied, scared to death, probably the scariest he's ever been in his life. That leads ultimately to Chris deciding to work in law enforcement because he hates bullies. He wants to crush the bullies. He wants to protect others. He joins the Joint Terrorist Task Force. Then he goes to headquarters. After a life of serving others, he decides to become a what? A professor? And after a few years sitting with the professors and saying, these people are all theory, they're not really in the real world, I got to start my own business. So I go out, I strike out Black Swan. I write one of the best-selling books, for me, one of the most inspirational, motivational books that you can read on negotiation and communication. And I start scaling up a company. So from going out in the public sector, I'm in the private sector right now. And every year I'm getting better and better and better. And I'm going to be at MM6 with Jake and Gino teaching others the skills that I've learned over the last 30 to 40 years of a decorated career. Thanks, Chris.
Gentlemen, my pleasure. Thank you.
Well said, Gino. You got a little high in the middle, so keep it in second gear. You pulled it back down towards the end. I give you a 7.5 out of 10. And gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think of decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy. And that's the FBI hostage negotiator turned Superman. So, gang, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.